Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. And we want to remind you to check out our other podcasts, The Memo, our news podcast coming to you now every Wednesday and Friday. That's a little bit of a programming change there. Going to be a more beefed up edition looking into the weekend. And also check out Prep Rally, everything high school sports with Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan. That's coming to you every Wednesday. Logan and I are here with you on Thursdays talking Mississippi State and Ole Miss as schedules allow. And schedules are settling down a little bit, Logan. How are you?
Well, I wish mine was. I was ready to flip that switch to full-time basketball, you know, this time of year. And just can't keep football off the books. You know, it just something keeps kind of popping up every few hours, it seems like. Mississippi State lost four football commitments in 8 days, and they lost three coaches since the bowl game. Now, one of those coaches has been replaced, Mississippi State, and Louisville kind of swapped defensive coordinators. Peter Sermon went to Louisville, and Todd Grantham came to Mississippi State. But Mississippi State still has two coaching vacancies on the staff right now. Maurice Langquist, the safeties coach, left to take the secondary position at Minnesota, and of course Brian Johnson left a couple of weeks ago to take the same to be the offensive coordinator at Houston. He was Mississippi State's quarterbacks coach. So still a couple of vacancies on Dan Mullen's staff, and that means more football and more work to do for me, I guess.
Well, Logan, you talk about football like it's a season, man. It's not really a season. You know, Jesus said football you have with you always. And so it's just that kind of thing. Hey, Ole Miss has finally completed its coaching staff. And this staff that had very little turnover and a lot of continuity for Hugh Freeze's first five seasons as head coach, well, they're going to have more new people than old people next year. They'll have five new assistant coaches. Freeze just filled out his staff with the hiring of wide receivers coach Jacob Peeler. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Logan, let's go back to this Mississippi State staff for starters. It's another defensive coordinator for Dan Mullen, and it really has the look of some talk and some communication that was going on before the changes were made. Do you think that was there any of that in place? Do you think Sermone maybe had an eye on Louisville and maybe thought that Grantham could be coming to state? You see this kind of trade, as it looks like. You see this from time to time, but it's rare.
It is very rare. You know, I've seen it before, but it's been a long time, and I've never had it happen to a team that I actually covered. But it is unique, and, you know, obviously Peter Sermon and Dan Mullen got along really well. That's one of the things that Mullen liked about Sermon and brought him in last year. But the thing is, it just didn't work, and I think everybody that watched Mississippi State defense this past year knew that, and you know, the opponents definitely knew that because they were able to go up and down the field at will against Mississippi State. You know, four new defensive coaches on that side of the ball didn't help matters. But then they changed schemes on top of that. They went from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And just all that newness on that side of the ball, Mississippi State just never clicked on that side of the ball. I mean, it's very rare that they put even Samford went up down the field. Samford rolled up, you know, 500-something yards against Mississippi State. And that's your FCS game. So everybody that they played was able to move the football against them, and it just didn't work. And obviously, Dan Mullen, the last few defense coordinators that he's hired, has kind of went with that up-and-coming kind of guy. I mean, whether you look at Manny Diaz or Chris Wilson or Jeff Collins, you know, all those guys were considered kind of up-and-coming guys. You know, same thing with Peter Sermon. In fact, it was a lot of those guys' first time as a defensive coordinator. Well, this time he kind of switched gears and is going to a veteran. Todd Grantham's been around. He's been at Georgia. He's been in the NFL as a defense coordinator. He's obviously been at Louisville the past 3 years. And he's a lot – it brings 10 years of experience as a defense coordinator along with him. And that's more experience than probably a lot of those coaches at Mississippi State or that Dan Mullen has hired in the past combined. I mean, he brings a lot of experience. He's a veteran coach. He's a known commodity in that regard. So, you know, I think he kind of switched gears. He saw that the young up-and-comers either weren't sticking around and were taking other jobs as soon as they found a little bit of success or, you know, at the same time weren't having success here. So he's going with Grantham. I don't know how long he'll stick around either, but at the same time, you want some stability at that spot and some experience as well. And I think Todd Grantham brings that. I mean, his defenses over the last 3 years at Louisville were second in the country in yards per carry, second only to Alabama. So if you're up there, if your name's mentioned in the same breath as Alabama on defense, you're doing something right. So we'll have to wait and see how the spring goes to see how Mississippi State does on that side of the ball. But, you know, on paper, it looks like it's a good hire.
Well, the older you get, the more you want to move less, it seems. So maybe, Todd Grantham may not be looking for the next job. I mean, he's back in the SEC. It probably just depends on how it goes. I did notice that as soon as that hiring was announced, those guys that cover Georgia kind of lit up with blog posts and whatnot about Grantham coming back to Athens, and State plays there next September. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
So, yeah, I know he spent a lot of time there in Athens. So, anyway, interesting hires there. And just round up, what are the other openings on State staff right now?
Right now they've got the quarterback's coach, and now as of this morning, confirmed the safety's coach. So still two spots. You know, be another turnover on that defensive staff. So, I mean, it'd be two new coaches out of the four on that side of the ball for sure. And then, obviously, the quarterback's coach as well. Quarterback's coach isn't that big of a deal. I mean, most schools, you know, that's a huge spot. But Dan Mullen is so hands-on with the quarterbacks and obviously has a good track record with developing quarterbacks. You know, he's just going to kind of get a guy that can help, you know, when he's not around, when he's doing other things. He needs somebody else there to kind of work with the quarterbacks. But that's not as huge a position as some of the others that he's had to hire.
Well, Ole Miss, Hugh Freeze now has completed his staff for the second time. He had completed it with the hiring of Trey Scott as defensive line coach a couple of weeks ago, and then all of a sudden he was looking for a wide receivers coach again after Matt Lubick left to become offensive coordinator at Cal. And I saw a lot of the social media narrative right away just talked about the ship is sinking, and look at Matt Lubick leaving already. The guy left to become a coordinator. He went from position coach to coordinator. He had been a coordinator at Oregon last year, offensive coordinator, and I thought Freeze kind of overhired. It looked like Lubick was maybe overqualified to be just a position coach, and obviously Lubick felt that way and went to become coordinator at Oregon. So Freeze was suddenly again looking for a wide receivers coach, and he found himself back in the Pac-12 after another coaching change. Now, he was making some progress in this search, and there were several candidates. I think the two strongest were Will Hall, the coach now at West Georgia, and Trooper Taylor, who is an assistant at Arkansas State. And it might have been down to one of those two. But Cal decided to part ways with its head coach, Sonny Dykes, and then suddenly Jacob Peeler was available as well, a guy who grew up in Mississippi, a native of Kosciuszko, played junior college ball in the state, and then played also at Louisiana Tech, and that's kind of where he got into the coaching business. He's only been a full-time assistant coach for 2 years, but he spent several years as a graduate assistant coach and a lot of time around Sonny Dykes and that offense at Cal. Now, the recruiting, I think, kind of set him apart in this discussion for the position at Ole Miss. You look at all these guys that Freeze has hired, and you don't have to get too deep into the bio before it starts talking about recruiting. Now, they may all turn out to be wonderful coaches as well, but there's no doubt that Hugh Freeze wanted to make sure that he has compiled a staff that can get talent to campus. Now, Peeler has been a part of some dynamic offenses at Cal with some receivers that have put up big numbers. He coached the inside receivers there. But, you know, you really think this could be a hire that settles down the receivers already on the Ole Miss roster and maybe even the ones thinking of committing as well. But there's so much talk about Jacob Peeler as a recruiter, and I went back and found some things written about him, and there was a feature put out by the Rivals affiliate that covers Cal, at which point Sonny Dykes just really went on and on about Peeler's ability as a recruiter. So I know that was a big part of what attracted Freeze to him in this position. Will Hall, though, remember that name, Logan. I know you do. Bobby Hall's son, you know, Bobby Hall, longtime successful coach in Mississippi. We used to think of Will Hall as an up-and-comer, you know. But Will Hall is now 36 years old. You know, he played high school ball at Amory. He went on to play at North Alabama, where he won the Harlan Hill Trophy, Logan. That's the equivalent of the Division II Heisman Trophy. That was back in 2003. And Will Hall has been extremely successful as a Division II head coach, going 56-20 in six seasons, three of those at West Alabama in Livingston and three at West Georgia. In those six seasons, four times he's made the Division II playoffs, three times his teams have won or shared the Gulf South Conference championship. So he's really established a body of work for himself as a successful Division II head coach. I thought that was an interesting name in the mix, but you know, clearly he'd like to move up to another level. That's a name to keep an eye on in the future, whether at Ole Miss or somewhere else. But Hugh Freeze now has completed his coaching staff. There'll be five new hires. And that's going to be Phil Longo, the offensive coordinator who comes from Sam Houston State, a guy that Freeze believes will help him run the football better, more efficiently, maybe not run it more. You know, Ole Miss really strived for balance in play calling under Dan Werner, and they got that. They were going to run the football. They weren't going to always run it well, but they were going to call those runs. Longo, it is hoped by Freeze, will really help the Rebels be more productive in that area. Then defensive coordinator Wesley McGriff, linebackers coach Bradley Dale Pavito, defensive line coach Trey Scott, and then Peeler at wide receiver. So chemistry on the staff, you know, is very important to Freeze. Had very little turnover. Now all of a sudden, five of his nine guys next season will never have coached together. Trey Scott, who had been a GA at Ole Miss, and McGriff, who coached there on Freeze's first staff in 2012, they'll know some of the people, but as far as these guys coaching together, that hasn't happened. So we'll see how they all get along and what happens there when they tee it up next season, and before that with spring football. Spring football right around the corner, Logan. You know, football just never stops.
Yeah, I think Mississippi State's going to be going their spring practices right around that first week of March. It's actually going to be abbreviated a little bit this year. Super Bowl weekend is going to be a week or two earlier than it normally is in April, so they're going to have to come back, kind of get football practices narrowed down. They're going to have practice more per week than they normally do, and I'm a fan of that. I want it to be over with. I love spring football. It's not my favorite thing to do. It's just a bunch of practices in a row and then a meaningless game, but I know the fans love it, so we're out there. You kind of get a look ahead of what next year's team could look like without all those freshmen.
Well, you know, I hated it as a player, Logan, because in South Louisiana, you know, hey, by the time we were in spring now, it really was spring, and everything was lush and green and growing, and on the football field that meant a lot of stickers, you know. So we're out there in the stickers, man, and you know, you leave practice and you just got these red marks all over your arms and legs and you know, constantly pulling those things out. And we tried to get on as much padding as we could, you know, those arm pads that you would slip on that you wouldn't ordinarily wear. Boy, we covered up with them in the spring, you know, just trying to protect ourselves from that.
I think that's probably where my hatred for spring football began, because I was a three-sport athlete. I played football, baseball, and basketball, and baseball was just about to get going good. And we'd always, at my school, we were one of the premier football programs in private school in Alabama. I won a couple of state championships in a row to end my career. And football was king there. And the football coach wouldn't let you go out to play baseball. Even though baseball was in season, I had to stop to go practice football for a season that didn't even start until September, you know, August or September. So, you know, I was just not happy about that, because baseball was always my favorite sport.
All right, shifting gears a little bit, let's talk basketball. A disappointing loss for Ole Miss last night at the Pavilion, losing 69-47 to Georgia. And Logan, just when you thought maybe, and I understand it was Auburn, but Auburn is a little more talented than they have been in recent seasons, and it was a road win for Ole Miss last Saturday, so you were hoping, if you're an Ole Miss fan, that might have been a launching point, and that was kind of a talking point for players after the game last Saturday at Auburn. And they came out Wednesday night at the Pavilion with, a good energy on defense, and they were changing things up, moving from man to zone and giving Georgia different looks and forcing some bad shots and some turnovers. But this team just couldn't score. And I know that after the game, Andy Kennedy was really concerned about turnovers, and that's been a season-long issue for Ole Miss. But, you know, they only had 13 last night. That's not a terrible night by Ole Miss standards this season. And Georgia actually had more. They had 14 turnovers. But Georgia seemed to get more done with their turnovers. They had 15 points off of turnovers compared to just 6 for Ole Miss. The Rebels came at inopportune times, but, man, the problem was just they just couldn't shoot. You know, there were times that they would have, you know, really crisp passing and ball moving, and you think, man, this possession's really fixing to end in something good. But all of a sudden, the last guy with the ball is Markcanvas Hyman, the team's least productive player on offense. I mean, so you got some of that going on, and then you just got, you know, missing open looks. Now, Georgia's one of the better defensive teams in the league. They typically are very good defensively under Mark Fox, and that's the same this season. But, you know, there are no shutouts in basketball, and Ole Miss was still getting some good looks. You know, they were getting shots with shoulders squared and feet set and, you know, and just not knocking them down. And you've got to be more effective than 27.5% at home and 10.5%, Logan, 10.5% from three-point range, 2 for 19. And just not a good shooting night for Ole Miss. You could see that. You know, early on, they fell behind again. They trailed by 12 at the half. In 4 SEC games, Ole Miss has been behind at halftime each game. And the smallest deficit has been 8 points at Auburn. Now, in a couple of games, they've trimmed some points off that deficit and showed a little life in the second half. They really didn't do that so much against Georgia. Just really couldn't knock down shots. Now they go to South Carolina on Saturday to face the team that leads the SEC in opponent field goal defense. And so they're going to have to find a way to get some scoring, and they're probably going to have to do it without DeAndre Burnett, their leading scorer, who also was not hitting shots. He was just 1 for 6 when he went out with about 4.5 minutes left in the first half. And it wasn't just a mild sprained ankle, Logan. Now, he really was in a lot of pain and had to be helped off the floor. He didn't just limp off. There is no official word on Burnett's status as we produce this program. But it did not look good for Burnett leaving the floor against Georgia. And, he's a transfer from Miami, and he scored a lot of points, at 19 a game. But they've also been relying on Cullen Neal, the transfer from New Mexico, who in the pre-conference schedule was a very good shooter and was averaging close to 12 points a game. And he has really struggled in SEC play. He's had one good half. He scored 13 in the second half against Auburn, was 4-for-7 from the floor, 3-for-6 from three. In that game, a pivotal player as Ole Miss rallied to win on the Plains. But in the other three games, the other three conference games, Cullen Neal has really struggled. In fact, when you add up his shooting percentage against Kentucky, Florida, and now Georgia, he's something like 2-for-15, and in two of those games has not scored at all. They're going to have to get more from that position, whether it's Cullen Neal or someone else, and you look down the bench behind him, and he remains the best option. They need Cullen Neal to knock down shots, and this team really just needs to find itself offensively, and it has a tall task Saturday at South Carolina.
Yeah, Mississippi State the last week has actually fared well on the road. Their first conference game last Tuesday, was here at home against Alabama, and Mississippi State lost that game by 10, 68-58. It was their lowest point total of the season. Didn't shoot the ball particularly well in that game, and obviously Mississippi State has not played well on the road in probably the last, 5 years. I mean, they've been a terrible road team in the conference, and lo and behold, they go down to LSU and put up 95 points in a 95-78 win. It was the most points they had scored on the road in the SEC in 54 years. So it was just incredible to watch. I mean, Mississippi State just shot the lights out down there in Baton Rouge. Shot 54.1% in that ball game and made 11 threes. They were actually 50% from three-point range. They were 11 out of 22 from three-point range. Just had balanced scoring all around. Went with a new starting lineup. He liked the size. I've been howling after that ball game. Was it just a matchup deal against LSU, but he said they were going to go with that lineup moving forward, and he did against Arkansas as well. But he started Schneider Gerard and Eric Coleman together. That's two guys that are 6'10 down low. He was just, Mississippi State was getting beaten so badly on the boards going into that LSU ball game that he just wanted to get some more height out there on the floor. And, he started them, and also started Lamar Peters at point guard. So that's two new starters he introduced during that ball game, and everything just kind of clicked from there. And what that does with that lineup, it allows Eric Coleman to go from the 5 to the 4, which is his natural position. He's more of a power forward, kind of, face up to the basket kind of guy, can do a little bit of different things, kind of a stretch forward kind of guy, even though he has the height of a center. He can shoot the three, and he's got the green light to do that. He can do a lot more athletic things than you normally see from a guy that's, big guy down low. And it also moved Mario Kegler from the 4 to the 3. So he's actually out there back on the wing where he belongs. He's a 6'7 guy that has a lot of ability, but he was matched up at the 4 most of those times against guys that were so much bigger than him. He struggled defensively. And just didn't have the height to get a lot of those rebounds. And also moved Quindary Weatherspoon from the 3 to the 2, which is more of his natural position. Quindary Weatherspoon, obviously, Mississippi State relies so much on him. So much of their offense and defense goes through him. And kind of as Q goes, Mississippi State goes. He didn't have a particularly good game against Alabama and has played really well over the last two games. And, he kind of just, when he's on, Mississippi State's on. And, they play really well. Go out to Arkansas, a place that I went to last year and covered Mississippi State and watched them get blown out in that ball game. The threes were falling for Arkansas in that game. The state just really never stood much of a chance. But it was kind of different. The other night, on Tuesday night, when Mississippi State went up there, they won 84-78. So they put up a lot of points in that ball game as well. Shot 45% in that ballgame, hit 12 threes. They were 12 out of 26. So Mississippi State shooting the ball really, really well from three-point range right now. Quindary Weatherspoon goes off for 25 points. Lamar Peters had 14. Eric Coleman had a double-double, 13 points, 11 boards. And it's not just one guy doing all the scoring. Everybody's kind of contributing just a little bit here and there. It's kind of just balanced scoring throughout. And that was good to see for Mississippi State, especially LSU was their first true road game of the season. So they played back-to-back road games for the first time all season. And when you have the youngest team in college basketball, you really don't know how a lot of those players are going to react going on the road for the first time in that environment. And so far, they've handled it well. They look like a veteran team these last two ball games. But, I know enough about freshmen who have covered them for so long. You really don't know what you're going to get night in and night out of those players. I mean, they didn't play well against Alabama. And, it's going to be kind of a roller coaster ride. They're going to win some games that they're not supposed to, and they're going to lose some games that they're not supposed to. And they've already done both of those probably this year. So it's going to be up and down throughout conference play. The encouraging thing, Parrish, is I think Saturday, State plays Texas A&M Saturday at noon. I think Humphrey Coliseum, for the first time in a long time, is actually going to resemble what it used to be. Back when I first started covering them, and I know back when you covered Mississippi State as well. It's been a long time since that was the toughest ticket in town, as they used to market it. They've been playing to half full and third full crowds for a lot of these past 5 years, and it's been a long time since they've really packed that thing out for a men's college basketball game. And I really expected to see with back-to-back road wins. It seems like the excitement surrounding Mississippi State men's basketball is starting to come back a little bit. I think the interest in this young team is up there, so we'll have to see what the crowd's like. But I'm expecting a pretty raucous environment on Saturday, and like I said, it's been a long time since that's happened.
Well, winning just makes everything better, doesn't it? Winning just solves everything. All you have to do is win. Hey, 95 points at LSU. I saw the LSU guys tweeting out at the end of that game that it was the most points. Of course, you mentioned the most points State has scored since, what, the 60s or whatnot. But I think it went back to it was the most points they had scored since they had played one of those years at LSU, back when LSU was playing at the Agricultural Building. There's such a such a line there in LSU basketball history of before Pete Maravich and after Pete Maravich. And, it was the interest in LSU back in those days when they were playing in what they call the Cow Palace that helped them build the Assembly Center a few years later. That was of interest to me that it went all the way back to State playing in that Ag Building at LSU. So it had been a while. Hey, folks, want to thank you for being with us today on Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Want to remind you to check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's coming to you every Wednesday and Friday now, a programming change there. And check out Prep Rally with Blake Morgan and Gene Phelps, coming to you every Wednesday. And Logan Lowry and I will be here with you on Thursday or Friday, but we're going to be here with you once a week with Double Coverage, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Come back and be a part of the program.